Chapter 8. A Thousand Points of Light. Rykath. Humanity has always managed to summon a poetic turn of phrase for the projected end of everything. Scribes love to speak of how things fall apart, the centre unable to hold, contrasting the rise of oceans with the fall of empires. Philosophers claim the end will come not with a bang, but with a whimper. And of death? Nothing to fear, they promise. Death is merely another path. These sentiments are always composed by men and women far removed from any experience of what the end of all things would really be. It's easy to fall back on sanguine philosophy when you can't comprehend the truth. Yes, the centre cannot hold, but its dissolution means the genocide of trillions. Yes, death is another path, but that path leads to the soul of every man, woman, and child sliding into the open mouths of mad gods. Had the ancient wise ones seen such things with their own eyes, perhaps their scrawls would have been somewhat less serene. But a coin has two sides. Twinned with the serenity of ignorance is the spectre of hope. People will resist the end, even against the evidence of their eyes and the workings of their minds. Logic plays no part in it. This is the arena of hope, with survival instincts baked into the brain of every living being. Emotions like that burn through anything as cold and blunt as reason. And so it was here, in the war's final days. It didn't matter that the war was over. It didn't matter that terror burned day and night beneath a funeral shroud of dust. The defenders fought on. The idea of a front line in the war for terror was fiction, already threatened with the first breach in the ultimate wall, by the hour of Jagatai Khan's charge to retake the Lionsgate spaceport. It was plain myth. Rogal Dorn had mapped and planned a nation's worth of fallback points, barricades, strongholds, weapons caches in the inner palace, and they were reached, defended, drained and abandoned in inevitable succession. Those that weren't abandoned were pounded out of existence from orbit, erased by blind bombardment from shipmasters unable to restrain themselves, or overrun by the Warmaster's horde. The bastions that yet survived were encircled in their own sieges, the defenders fighting on, selling their lives to delay the Horde's advance. It was no longer one war. The scale of Horus's invasion had always eclipsed that description, but never was it more obvious than now the defences were broken. The mitosis of warfare was rampant, and countless separate wars raged across the face of terror. Cohesion had given way to isolation, with the Emperor's remaining forces surrounded in their very last strongholds and foxholes, cut off from each other. 1,000 points of light across the Eurasian landmass, going out one by one. There, in the infinite ash, was the warrior Rykath. Though even this first fact was, in a way, a lie. Rykath was his imperial name, something he wore like an uncomfortable cloak for the sake of other sensibilities. His Fenrisian brothers, oathed and bloodlocked into the old ways, called him by his deed name. They called him No Foes Remain. He was a hunter and a warrior, and proud of the distinction between both. To Imperial scribes, he was just another space marine within the amalgamated mess of the Space Wolves Legion. Their eyes didn't see past the clashing knotwork of company and squad markings, impenetrable to outside observers. They didn't know his place in the cry of the grieving dragon warband, nor his role in the pack called Howl of the Hearthworld. Around his neck was a cord of plain leather, bearing a talisman of Fenrisian amber, granted a lifetime ago by his high war chief, Layman of the Rus tribe. Receiving it had been the proudest moment of his life. He would wear it until his death. Rykath stood on the battlements of Arjuna Bastion, a palatial sky spire bound to Meru Bastion by kilometres of arching walkways. With Meru overrun, Arjuna had stood alone for hours, protected by an ever-diminishing host of defenders. They'd done well, but they weren't gods to rewrite the flow of fate. The enemy scaled the walls, came over the Skywalk bridges, and brought the walls down with sustained cannonades. This was the end of Arjuna. Gunships couldn't fly in the dust, not reliably. The ash in the air lethally abraded the sky support of both sides, frost-blasting cockpit glass, chewing through internal machinery and causing Thunderhawks to choke, to stall, to die gasping. Gunship jets ran brutally hot, melting the ash into glass which choked turbine blades and stalled engines. There was no clear patch of air through which to soar and recover, no matter how high or low a craft went, and none had safely reached orbit in days. Pilots couldn't see. They flew blind with dead instruments through a burning city the size of a nation, spiked with buildings the scale of mountain ranges. They wrestled with the controls of vehicles whose engines couldn't breathe. But that didn't stop either side trying. Desperation forced the hands of some. Hope galvanized others, and bloodthirst was ever a motivating factor for many. Rykath, surrounded by his dead brothers, was close to one of the last remaining gunships still on the wall. He wasn't a fool, nor would he ever be accused of being an optimistic soul. He knew he was dead. In his ears, over the roar of the flames and the crashing of a thousand bolters, a voice forced its way through the scramble of the Vox, imploring him to run. But he didn't run because, as noted, he wasn't a fool. He'd rather die with a blade in his hand than in the mangled metal of a gunship crash. He wept for the slain. There was no loss of dignity. Fenrisian culture, as with many other Legion homeworld traditions, saw no shame in sorrow. At his feet were the brothers he'd fought beside for two human lifetimes. He loved them above life itself. Of course he wept. A machine couldn't. A coward wouldn't. There was Kargir, called 13 Stars Falling, born beneath a meteor shower, the greatest omen of the northern tribes, and dead now of a blade in both hearts. There was Vega, called Echo of Three Heroes for the ancestors he resembled, born in the endless Fenrisian winter and killed by a bolt in the head. There was Ordum, called Kin to the Night, born to hunt in the darkness, dead in a war that should never have been fought. They were the last. The others of his pack had died weeks ago. Hardly any wolves remained on Terra, and of those few, almost none still drew breath. The beseeching voice didn't stop until he severed his link to the Vox. Rykath stayed where he was as figures moved past him in the dust. Humans, masked, running, limping. Defenders fleeing. Why? Where was there left to run? What was so special about dying over there, instead of right here? He crouched and placed a hand on the ruptured breastplate of his officer and brother, 13 Stars Falling. Filthy, armoured fingertips pressed lightly to his brother's broken imperialis. He smiled through the bitter tears, because the accidental symbolism of the moment was so blunt, so on the nose, that he couldn't help but grin. They came for him then, the enemy pursuing the fleeing defenders. He rose, holding not just his own chainsword, but the powered blade of his fallen chieftain. One sword revved into angry life, the other sparked with killing lightning. In the sagas of his homeworld, and the legion that rose from those icy roots, heroes always had worthy last words. They extemporized oh so valiantly, and issued grand last challenges that forced their foes to listen with reluctant respect. But Rykath had never been one for the saga poems, and these enemies, these bellowing world-eaters and chanting thousand suns, were too drunk on the milk of their black gods to respect their enemies. Nor did they deserve respect in kind. He faced them, and he fought them. That part at least matched the sagas of Fenris. But there was no joy at the slaying he did this dawn. To kill one's enemies was what was expected of any warrior. What mattered to him in these final moments wasn't who he killed, but where he himself stood, ready to die. He was dying with his brothers, part of his pack to the very end. This was right, the way it should be. No foes remain, named for his enduring tirelessness, admired by his brothers for always fighting until no foes remained, finally failed to live up to his name. There was no shame in this. How could there be shame in defeat when there was never any hope of victory? When the moment came, Rykath couldn't stop grinning. He was grinning as he stood shin-deep in the dead, with the steel of his enemy's blades meeting inside him. He was grinning even as he dropped, life pumping from him in a flow of proud Fenrisian blood. The warrior that killed him, one of the Thousand Sons, took the power sword from his dying fingers. Less than a minute later, that warrior was killed by a stray torrent of Lascannon fire, and the blade, once treasured by the warriors of Howl of the Hearthworld, was vaporized, forever forgotten. Such were the whims of war. By the time Rykath was giving his last grin through a mouthful of blood, the Imperial Fist's gunship further down the ramparts had taken off. To stay on the wall was to die, and the pilot took his chances in the sky. The Thunderhawk sucked ash into its mechanical respiration with long heaving roars and left the ground behind. It clawed skyward, already labouring, already doomed. When its engine strangled on fusing glass, its pilot dived, forcing cooling air through the intakes, hoping to freeze and shatter clear the clogged turbines. His name was Ektar, a Terran-born Imperial Fist. No one saw what he did, but the manoeuvre was magnificent. The soldiers aboard were hurled against the inner hull and against the restraints of their flight thrones, many of them believing they'd been hit by anti-air fire, not realizing their pilot's skill had bought them a few more seconds of life. But there was no clear air at the end of the dive. There was no clear air left on Terra. The tumbling gunship cleared its throat only to fill it back up with ash and dust. It choked on filth again only seconds after expelling it. The Thunderhawk fired its orbital boosters, an act of absolute desperation, and afterburnt hard through the blinding dust. For 3 seconds it gained altitude at the cost of its abrading hull and dying engines, cannibalizing itself to fly free. It collided with one of the Baroque walkways, stretching between Meru and Arjuna bastions, which its pilot had no hope of ever seeing. With much of the gunship's left side sheared away, the wreckage spiralled down on engines that screamed until the dust strangled them fully. What was left of the hull speared into no man's land, wreckage and shrapnel flying every which way, carving through a scattered infantry regiment in Horus's colours who were pursuing a convoy of retreating Imperial army. Arjuna Bastion fell less than an hour later. And out went another light.